Judith Minty is this evening's guest for the last in this year's Michigan Writers Series presentation. I'm Jane Arnold, your host for the interview portion of the evening. Judith Minty is the author of 4 full-length collections of poetry and 3 chapbooks. Her first book, Lake Songs and Other Fears, received the United States Award of the International Poetry Forum in 1973. Her selected and new poems will be published by Michigan State University Press in the spring of 2000. She's widely published and the recipient of several awards for her poetry. She has taught at several colleges and universities in the U.S. and is Professor Emerita of English at Humboldt State University in Arcata, California. Or is that Arcata?
It's Arcata,
I suspected. She lives now in New Era along the Lake Michigan shoreline with her husband and her yellow dog named River. She also spends part of the year at her remote fishing camp on the Yellow Dog River in Michigan's UP. Welcome, Judith Minty.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. Back where I started my education, I went to Michigan State as a student.
You did. Mm-hmm.
Many, many years ago.
I won't ask. My first comment, and for your response, is that April is National Poetry Month. And there's been some recently published books on how to read a poem. The most recent I saw is just out this month by Edward Hirsch, titled How to Read a Poem and Fall in Love with Poetry. You've written several books of poetry and taught for many years. Just how do you lead people to read and enjoy poetry?
I just bought that Edward Hirsch book myself. I haven't read it yet, but I thought I'm going to be teaching at University of Alaska starting in the fall for a year.
Oh, how exciting.
In Anchorage. So I ordered that as one of the books for my grad class. And so we'll learn about it together. But I can remember my old friend Etheridge Knight saying several years ago now that a poem must enter the small, when a poem is said aloud, it enters the small bones of the ear, and then it enters the body. And I think that is my criteria for how one reads a poem. One allows it to enter the body instead of merely intellectualizing. And because poetry originally began as an oral tradition, it certainly seems logical to me that that's what we must attend to. So, and besides that, the fact that I am out of Whitman and then out of also William Carlos Williams, where one sings of oneself, mm-hmm. and one says no idea but in things, that both of those components. For me, need to enter a poem on how to read a poem. One must attend to the things of this earth, and one must be in the oral tradition and write out of the personal. As Adrienne Rich today says, it's a long, convoluted sentence. Have I made a period yet? As Adrienne Rich says today, the personal is political, and I certainly believe that as well. Mm. Mm-hmm. So I think those are the components that I look for in a poem when I read one. There are other things, too. Emily Dickinson said that it has to, I think she's the one who said it has to knock the top of your head off. Mm. So, and so those are also things that I would ask of the poem.
Thank you. What are you going to do to celebrate National Poetry Month?
I hope write some poems.
Good.
Is that April?
Yes.
It's almost over.
It's almost over, yeah.
I better get busy.
One of my favorite poems is from Dancing the Fault, from a set of poems at the end called A Sense of Place. It's juxtaposing the Great Lakes with the Pacific
Coast. That's a four-part poem, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought of it as a set of poems because each one has a subtitle. And I thought that particular poem was quite emblematic of much of your poetry, in that it is so much a sense of place in it. And in fact, your award-winning book, The Lake Songs and Other Fears, evokes place marvelously. And those of us who know Michigan well can just put ourselves there very well by reading your poetry. This is the Michigan Writers Series. So
right.
Would like to have you enlarge upon that. Of course, your poetry itself is so very much a thing of the place. But what does
well? I think that's very true. What you said about this that the poem, A Sense of Place, being emblematic of my work, and in many ways. First of all, I was born and raised in Michigan, but because of other circumstances, I've found that I've had to live in other places in this country. I spent 13 years teaching and living in California,
and only recently returned. And much of your poetry reflects that as well.
Yes, and so I write about that place too. But Zantatsu Baker Roshi says that once the way has been internalized, it can be continued anywhere. And so, in some sense, this quest for the meaning or the sense of place is almost a religious quest. And so I am making that search. That poem was written when I was at Yaddo, which is in Saratoga Springs, New York, and I had been mourning snow living in California right before I got to Michigan snow, eastern snow, before I came to spend some time at Yaddo. Yaddo is a place, for those of you who don't know, Yaddo is a place where writers and visual artists and musical artists can go and do their work and be taken care of by a foundation, and you live at the place in Saratoga Springs, New York. And it's a wonderful place to get your work accomplished, particularly if you're having difficulty finding the means or the time to do that. Mm-hmm. So while I was there, it came to me that even in these smallest things, like midges and darters, small things that live in a pond that's just opening up after winter, there is the secret of the meaning of place. Mm-hmm. And so that has been an important poem for me, because I think that part of my quest has been to search for the way that we might have been able to communicate with the natural world before other things got in the way. For instance, whales, before the advent of motorized sailing vessels, could communicate with each other across hemispheres.
That was a lovely passage. I remember that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Thank you. And so then, of course, the sonar from the motors interrupted that communication. But how interesting that it took humans, by that I mean we, it's taken us so long to communicate across hemispheres with the wireless, and first, and then with other methods after that. And yet these whales could do it all along. Well, perhaps there was a deeper communication, and still is, between the living things of this earth and humans.
One of the things I noticed about your poetry that you're touching on right now, your sensitivity and your awareness of natural life, of nature, and its transcendence of what we can understand of it. And then I read somewhere that you are half Native American.
Not quite half.
Not quite half. But throughout your poetry, I saw that element, and I thought, I wonder. Mm-hmm. Because you talk about your Scandinavian background, and of course you have long, flowing blonde hair.
Well, that's helped along by the beauty parlor, I think.
But
I don't think this is actual color.
We won't talk about that. Anyway, do you feel that this, your background, your heritage, your ethnic makeup determined your the way you took with your poetry?
Well, maybe. Certainly, everything has a part. I am half Finnish. My father was born in Finland. Mm-hmm. And so that is the purest of the blood. My maternal grandfather was Ford Motor Company Mohawk, which means that I never lived in the traditional ways. So I think that my father was my guide into the natural world.
But I see you're wearing the Indian jewelry, too.
I do. I do.
You identify, I think, with it.
Yes, I do.
You were speaking about Ford Motor. I'm interested, too, in how Detroit gets into your poetry as well as as Leland or the Upper Peninsula. What are you writing right now?
I'm writing some very weird little poems called More Mad Painter Poems, or maybe Son of Mad Painter. I don't quite know what they're called, but they're a continuation of the Mad Painter poems that I started a while ago. I've also been putting this Selected and New together, which has been a big job. That's an immense undertaking. I had no idea that it would be that much of a job, so that's kind of diverted me away from what I might have been writing a little bit. I'm also working on some prose pieces.
Oh, that would be some very essays. Interesting, too. Who do you read for pleasure?
Well, I read one of your fine poets here at Michigan State, Diane Wachowski.
Oh, of course. Yes, of course.
And Robert Bly was my mentor a long time ago.
Oh.
When he was working with the Great Mother, and his look at the Jungian world through Marie-Louise von Franz and other people was a great help to me in the path that I took. I read so many people, it's hard to Charles Baxter is a wonderful fiction writer and poet as well. He's a good poet, but I mean, he's specialized in fiction now for several years, and I always look forward to his work. So, and he's a Michigan person as well. So I do have, also, I just did a blurb for a man named Russell Thorburn, whose book is coming out with New Issues Press in Western Michigan University. That's a press where Herb Scott is the editor, another fine poet. And this is Russell's first book, as all New Issues Press books are. And I think they're outstanding poems.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the people I'm reading at the present time.
Well, thank you. And I think we're just about almost ready for you to begin your reading. Look for Judith Minty's new book, Selected and New Poems, put out by Michigan State University Press, sometime next year,
yes.
Year 2000, a good way to begin the next millennium.
Yes, I hope so. It's called Walking with the Bear.